a Colorado law being challenged again at the Supreme Court. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. Several years after a baker won his fight to not be forced to make wedding cakes for gay couples, the justices are about to hear a new case this hour.
A Colorado web designer says a state anti-discrimination law violates her religious freedoms. Lori Smith, the web designer, says her religiously held views on marriage should allow her not to design websites for same-sex weddings. Colorado says the law simply requires Smith to provide the same services to all customers.
Fox's Jared Halper, and there is one last day to campaign for one last 2022 election, a Senate runoff in Georgia tomorrow.
A lot of people give lip service to the dignity of work, but you can't say that you believe in the dignity of work and not support the dignity of workers.
Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock in Atlanta this morning trying to fend off a challenge from Republican Herschel Walker, who tells Fox,
"This is about the people of Georgia, about the people of the United States of America. We got to get the government out because this is we the people, not we the government."
The FBI is in Moore County, North Carolina, where there are nearly 40,000 power outages after attacks on two power substations over the weekend. They're trying to find vandals with guns. Now, that didn't just leave people in the dark, but also in the cold. It got below freezing overnight.
Got no way to heat because we don't have a fireplace. And then we don't have no gas grill or anything like that.
And she might not get power back for days. Schools are closed also in the county. Russia keeps bombing Ukraine to knock out power to more areas. An attack today cut water service off in Odessa. This is the same day a new cap on Russian oil took effect, imposed by the U.S. and our allies. It's $60 a barrel. Russia says it won't supply to anyone for anything but full price. The price of oil is today around $81 a barrel. And a short time ago, Russian President Putin drove across the bridge to Crimea, repaired after a bombing. America's listening to Fox News.
This holiday season, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation delivers on its promise to do good and never forget the sacrifices America's greatest heroes have made for us with their annual Season of Hope. Between Thanksgiving and New Year's Eve, the foundation will deliver mortgage-free homes to dozens and dozens of America's catastrophically injured veterans, fallen first responder families, and Gold Star families. Bring hope to heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org.
What's for dinner? Burgers?
After last week, no thanks.
Avoiding foods due to fear of diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools? It may not be just stomach issues. It could be EPI, or exocrine pancreatic insufficiency. EPI can cause uncomfortable symptoms because it's a condition where the pancreas doesn't release enough digestive enzymes to break down food. But EPI can be managed. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and talk to your doctor about your symptoms. That's identifyepi.com.
The news on KBLU is brought to you by H&R Block. At H&R Block, help is here.
Here's the news in 60 seconds from YumaDailyNews.com. A bipartisan group of lawmakers and school officials have been pressing Governor Doug Ducey to call a special session to lift the school spending cap. Ducey signed a $1 billion increase to K-12 school spending, but they went over the spending cap. This could lead to staff cuts and the shortening of school year. A teenage boy has been arrested for allegedly shooting off a gun at the ASU campus in Tempe on Thursday. Police say the 17-year-old boy shot his gun off at a student and another before running away. The boy was quickly arrested. Arizona Western College has been scheduled to host its annual Christmas gala this weekend. The musical concert will feature AWC's orchestra, band, string assembly, chorus, and piano faculty. Ticket info on the website. Governor Doug Ducey has been informing the public that members of his office will conduct an on-site interviews for candidates who have applied for the vacancy of the Supreme Court in Yuma County. If you have ideas for a local news story, you could always send us an email. That email is newsroom@yumadailynews.com. Go ahead and send us your story and we'll take a look. That's news for now. I'm Kendra White.
Morning News is brought to you by Sprague Sports on 32nd Street, Yuma's hunting and shooting headquarters and responsible gun ownership since 1956.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
It might be hard to imagine, but there's a place where you can find a restaurant on every corner. a place where you can eat like a king for as little as a dollar. It might be hard to imagine, but this is the same place where the school lunches aren't just delicious. They're themed, with palate pleasers like mozzarella stick Mondays, taco Tuesdays, and French Fridays. Heck, even pizza counts as a vegetable here. This is a place where the fast food just keeps getting faster. You can even order delivery right from your video game console. And how's the food, you ask? Well, it is to die for. Don't believe us? Just ask the friends and family of the 300,000 who did last year. Welcome to the state of America. Welcome to Obesity USA. Population 115 million and getting bigger by the day. To learn more, go to visitobesity.org. That's visit OBECITY.org. Brought to you by the Pennington Biomedical Research Foundation.
Stuck in TikTok trends. Back in 1 minute with your food chain question of the day.
If you have diabetes and you're on Medicare, you may qualify for a free continuous glucose monitor system. Managing your diabetes is crucial to your health. The new CGM systems can automatically manage your diabetes better for you. And by using a CGM system, you can eliminate forever one thing most people with diabetes hate the most: finger sticks. Now it's possible to manage your diabetes better, end the painful finger sticks, and get a new CGM monitoring system at little or no cost to you. We even provide in-home delivery and do all the insurance paperwork for you. Now is the best time to manage your diabetes better and get your continuous glucose monitor. Call now for details. Call 800-438-1391, 800-438-1391, 800-438-1391. That's 800-438-1391. Paid for by U.S. Med.
Though teens have always faced pressure from their peers to look just right, TikTok videos from their influencers are turbocharging the pressure. Researchers from the University of Vermont found that the most viewed TikTok videos glorified weight loss and presented food as a means to achieve health and thinness. UVM senior researcher Lizzie Pope wrote, "Getting stuck in weight loss TikTok can be a really tough environment, especially for the main users of the platform, which are young people." Question: can you or can you not remember the last time your body weight was just right?
News Talk 560 KBLU, where Yuma comes to talk. Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Good morning, Yuma. This is Life, Death, and the Law, 560 AM, KBLU. I'm Sean Garner in studio here with Adam Hanson and Cody Beeson. And this morning, we're going to be talking about the Constitution, per usual, and why we can't get back to the traditional interpretation of the Constitution and the application of it, and for which it was originally written, and that is to limit the government in the lives of the people. Allow the people to do what they do, to innovate, to own property, and to succeed on their own merits or fail, and be allowed to do so without the government intervening. So a big issue that comes up when you're looking through the Constitution is the Second Amendment. Now, I'm not going to be talking about gun control today, although some of those issues may come up. But what I want to talk about specifically is how have we gotten this so wrong in interpreting the Second Amendment? I think when you look at the Constitution in general and say, well, this is what it was for, and over the years, through court interpretations, we have gotten far from the actual text of the Constitution. You can look directly at the first couple amendments, and you can see, yeah, we've gotten well off base. So the Second Amendment, let's start with that. It says, a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Focus on that last portion, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, some argue that the Second Amendment only is applicable to those who are serving in a militia because of the prologue there, a well-regulated militia. However, it has been examined and held up in the Supreme Court again and again that throughout the history of the Second Amendment, it was specifically to be applied to the individual. It was a necessity for an individual to keep and bear arms in order for a militia to exist, and so therefore they put that in the preamble. But the actual right itself is an individual right. And we go back to that, and there are interpretations. Specifically, the seminal case in this is Heller versus the District of Columbia, decided in 2008, where Justice Scalia was the writer of the opinion. And he describes that the Second Amendment is an individual right, but it doesn't come with unlimited ability for anybody to keep and bear any type of self-arm. And that's where he loses me a bit. He describes that it was written for individuals to bear arms, the type of which existed at the time that it was written. So we're talking Revolutionary War period. We're talking about muskets and single-shot pistols. And so why don't we just have those types of things? Why don't we just interpret it that way? If that's really what it was intended for, just the people at the time to keep and bear arms that existed at the time, why doesn't everybody only have the right to bear a single-shot handgun or a long rifle? And that's it. We've gone well beyond that. There were no Glocks back in 17, when this was adopted, 91, the Second Amendment. There were no repeating rifles. There weren't even bolt-action rifles at that time. There were muzzle-loading muskets. So if that's the argument, then we need to stop there. If we don't stop there, then that's not the argument.
I mean, so if that's the case, does that mean the First Amendment only protects what's printed off a press and nothing electronic at that point?
Great point. So that's been interpreted too, that the press was the freedom of speech and the way that speech was circulated.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we circulated it by printing it off this massive press that now is totally antiquated. And but that doesn't take away the understanding of what the right is to circulate your opinion. And the same thing goes with the guns. So the case in Heller was specifically about a handgun. And it was a special police officer of the District of Columbia who keep his handgun at home for protection. And the District of Columbia said, no, you're not allowed to unless you're issued a special license from the chief police. And he was not issued that license, and so he's denied the ability to hold a handgun at home. And the court ruled that that was a violation of the Constitution. Well, there were no handguns of that type. So if he were to keep a Revolutionary War-era pistol, the type of which Alexander Hamilton was killed with, right?
Right, with their dueling, yeah.
Yeah. And Justice Scalia said, no, that specifically was the type of gun that they were talking about because that was in existence when the Constitution was written, or the Bill of Rights, rather. Then I think the argument would be a little stronger to that point. But that isn't the type of weapon. None of those weapons really exist, or are used, I should say. They exist in very private collections and museums, but they don't exist for the purpose of hunting, for the defense of a state, a nation, any type of army, or even personal defense. So if we've gotten so far off base with the Second Amendment, what's to be done? Now, my argument isn't that we should have no ban on guns whatsoever. This is my argument. We need to stop twisting the language of the Constitution to have it mean whatever is convenient for us at the time. Yes, our society has changed. It is much different. Weapons exist. It did not exist at the time when the Bill of Rights were written and adopted and ratified. However, we can't just interpret it and sew in any understanding that we want at our convenience into the Constitution, because that's when we start getting rights that aren't actually in the Constitution. And a lot of us get upset when that happens. For example, recently, the court has began to return to the original interpretation of the writing of the Constitution, the written language of the Constitution, and that is read it to see whether or not certain rights exist in there, for example, the right to an abortion. And the final analysis was there is no mention of abortion in the Constitution. That's not to say that a woman should not be allowed to have that if she so chooses. It's just not a constitutional right.
But they're different arguments, and they're getting mixed together.
Absolutely. So the argument on one side is a woman should have the right to kill her own baby, as long as it's within the womb, or even in some cases shortly after. I'm not going there. I'm just saying that's not in the Constitution. If you should or should not have that right, argue that before the legislatures. You could even argue that in front of Congress for a national law, but it's not in the Constitution. Read the Constitution. It's not that lengthy of a document. That right is not in there. So you can't say it's a constitutional right. When you talk about constitutional rights, look at the actual Constitution itself. Look at the Bill of Rights, and then look at the 17 amendments that came after the Bill of Rights for a total of 27 amendments. If it's found in there, then it's a constitutional right. Why do we have those constitutional rights? Originally, many of the Founding Fathers were very opposed to the adoption of the Bill of Rights. In fact, the Bill of Rights didn't even get adopted until 2 years after the Constitution was ratified. And no, it was actually 4 years after the Constitution was ratified in 1787. So the Bill of Rights was adopted in 1791. And there was a lot of opposition to that. And the reason that there was so much opposition to that, and you'll read this in both the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers. There were two sides of this argument here. And the arguments were, we want a government that is limited. If we give the government some power, we need to put checks and balances in where it makes it very difficult for the government to act, and more difficult for the government to impose and take away the power of the people, especially the power that the people have not already conceded to it. So, for example, in the Ninth Amendment, it states that the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. That means anything that's not enumerated in the Bill of Rights or the Constitution isn't going to be interpreted in any way to restrain all the other rights that are retained by the people. The only purpose of the Constitution is to put the limits on the government and retain all other rights to the people. So in the Bill of Rights, people were concerned that once we start enumerating more and more rights, the right to freedom of speech, the right to freedom of press, the right to the freedom of worship, and to assemble and to bear arms and not have to have military men in your house during times of peace, Third Amendment. They didn't want to enumerate those because they felt like it would at some point be twisted to say, well, we've enumerated all the rights that the people have, and anything that's not stated in there, then they don't have those rights. And I could easily see that argument. They wanted to say, this is what the Constitution gives the government, A, B, and C powers, and that's it. Everything else under the sun, that's reserved to the people. But eventually it was decided that the Bill of Rights were necessary to make it very specific as to what rights the people had that could not be voted away. What rights the people had that the government specifically was being placed in check and could not supersede. And then as a bookend to those rights, it said, these enumerated rights in the Constitution shall not be construed to deny the other rights retained by the people. That's right at the end of the Bill of Rights. So here we have these Bill of Rights, and many people think that we can vote away rights by a majority vote and just have laws written by our legislatures or through Congress that describes what restrictions ought to be had on speech, what restrictions ought to be had on the press, you know, what we should be able to put in Twitter feeds.
Well, look at what Alex Jones is going through. I mean, Alex Jones you want to call it entertainment, whatever, news, I don't know about that. But my point is, he was saying some things that were crazy, and a court, what is it, $1 billion or something like that? I mean, something, a crazy number he's going to bankrupt out of.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, he doesn't really have freedom of speech to say any kind of crazy things anymore.
Well, okay, so let's put this in context. Alex Jones, he made a living and made a lot of money from denying that the Sandy Hook mass shooting occurred.
I mean, yeah, I mean, he said some crazy things, and that's certainly one of them, yeah.
He said that the people were making it up.
Crisis actors and things like that, yeah.
Yeah, that the mass shooting didn't really occur, and so he was getting a lot of people fired up about it, and he was a pretty good radio host in the fact that he could convince people in his argument. But ultimately, what he was doing was he was making money off of a controversy that was built up on lies.
But they say the same thing about 9/11. You know, I've heard 9/11 is an inside job. I've heard the earth is flat. I've heard all those things. But this is something that they actually took to court and they used against them, and it stuck.
So, and here's where I think that the civil judgment against Alex Jones was okay.
Okay.
Because it was libel, right? It was false. He was making false accusations that actually caused harm to other people. And it was in a civil court. And when you can prove that something that you're doing is actually creating harm to somebody else, and what you're saying is a lie. Now, truth is a 100% defense to any charge for libel. But what he was saying wasn't true. And so they first had to prove that what he said was not true. And number two, they had to prove that what he said caused harm. And they did prove both those things. So you're not free to go out there and spew lies that destroy people's lives. And well, that's freedom of speech, so that's okay. It's not protected under the First Amendment. What's protected is you can say it and the government can't suppress you from saying it, but that doesn't mean your fellow men who are being injured by what you're saying can't go out there and get money damages against you. And that's exactly what happened in the Alex Jones case. We have to take a break. This is 560 AM KBLU, Life, Death, and the Law.
More thought-provoking conversation coming up next on Life, Death, and the Law, right here after this.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
Weather is brought to you by Ed Whitehead's Tire Pros, serving Arizona for over 20 years.
Some dense fog out there this Monday morning with a lingering humidity from the weekend, but that would decrease as we head through this afternoon. Much drier conditions as we head through the rest of the work week. A mix of sun and clouds for us this Monday, highs in the low to mid 70s. Low tonight, mid 50s. We are looking a touch cooler for the next few days. Tuesday, mostly sunny, highs around 70. Overnight lows in mid 40s. Wednesday, sunny with highs in the mid to upper 60s. I'm meteorologist Rachel Kay with the Weather Channel.
We are there in your community. Small business owners, mechanics, police officers, homemakers. And we are there serving our nation in the Air Force Reserve. When medical emergencies arise, we meet the challenge. In cybersecurity, protecting and defending in cyberspace. When natural disasters happen, there in space. As a strong part of the nation's defense, we are there in the community and we are there for our nation. We share a vision to make a difference, united and focused, taking pride in being there in service of our country. We are Reserve Citizen Airmen, and we are there with over 180 different jobs to serve your country. Air Force Reserve.
Hey, winter visitors, it's time for the annual Welcome Back Winter Visitors Bash. Visit with many of our local businesses all under one roof. Join the fun at the Civic Center on Wednesday, December 7th. The event starts at 9 a.m. for VIP access. Doors open from 9:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Don't forget to stop by the Yuma Sun booth for your goodie bag. We can't wait to see you at the Civic Center on Wednesday, December 7th for this year's annual Welcome Back Winter Visitor Bash.
Hey, listener, welcome to Limu's Karaoke Lounge, where Liberty Mutual customizes your car insurance so you only pay for what you need, and the music never stops. Hit it!
There's an emu with a full-time job. His partner's Doug, but Limu's the heartthrob. Grubs and worms, that's what Limu eats. Gotta fuel up to save you money and hit the street!
Only pay for what you need at libertymutual.com.
Liberty, 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 liberty.
Listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back, Yuma. This is 560 AM KBLU, Life, Death, and the Law. We're talking about the Constitution and why is it so difficult for us to read the Constitution for what it says, interpret it, and apply the actual meaning. And so a good example of that is the Second Amendment, which says that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Very clear. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. There really can be only two interpretations of what the arms means. Is it arms, muskets, and single-shot pistols that existed during the time of the Revolutionary War and at the time that the Constitution was written and the Bill of Rights was adopted? Or is it any type of arms? That's really the question. And the interpretation in the most recent and most seminal Supreme Court cases has been that it applies to arms that exist for self-defense and arms that exist today, not just those arms that existed back then. Now, if you look back in the history of the Second Amendment, the purpose that it was written, and if you look through each of the amendments as they go, the primary purpose was to prevent the tyranny of the government over the people. So they're writing this right of the people into the Bill of Rights to prevent the tyranny of the government over the people. And the type of weapons that was used to prevent that was the type of weapons the government had. The people can also possess those types of weapons, meaning muskets and single-shot pistols, even up to cannons. I don't think that anybody that had a cannon at that time personally owned would be convicted. I've never seen any case to that extent for violating the Second Amendment because that's not what it intended. It was intended to prevent the government from infringing on the people's rights. So what does the government have today? Well, they've got armored trucks. They've got Humvees with 50 caliber automatic weapons.
They've drones.
They've got, you know, Predator drones that they can, you know, do a strike from 10,000 feet. So does that mean that we should have those as well? And my answer is no. I think that our society, and maybe others disagree with me, but my answer is no, and I think that a majority of the citizens of the United States would agree with that, including lawmakers and the states in general, would agree that we shouldn't have access to every weapon that the government has access to right now, because that just makes individuals too darn dangerous. At the time where they had muskets and single-shot handguns, that was reasonable. So what we need to do is not put in laws that twist and turn upside down the Second Amendment. What we need to do is amend the Second Amendment and create something new that is more akin to what we want today. What do we need today? Do we need to have an army to stand up against the federal government? Well, there is a small fraction of people out there that say yes, but I think a majority of the people, two-thirds of Congress, would say no. Three-quarters of the states would say no. And that's what you need to amend the Bill of Rights or the Constitution And that's what we should do. We should amend it so we can read the Second Amendment and all other amendments where there are clear written words in the actual verbiage and not have to twist it to fit within the society. Let's amend it to fit within the society. Because once you start twisting one amendment, then all the others lose any type of credibility because you can now begin to twist those and work out the rights that exist in them, such as freedom of speech, freedom of religion, so on and so forth, as was done during COVID, where people were not allowed to assemble and worship as they saw fit. And they were not allowed to speak about whether or not the COVID vaccine was something that was well enough studied and developed and a mandate for them was a good thing, or the origins of COVID, or whether or not the election was rigged. All of those things having to do with the First Amendment rights were being suppressed. And people got away from reading the First Amendment because we could twist it. I think we need to get right back to this is what the wording says, and unless that's amended, that's exactly what we're going to do. The reason that our founding fathers put it all together is because they were afraid that a 51% majority population would start to exercise mob rule and take away the rights of the individual citizens.
Aren't we seeing that?
And that's exactly what we're seeing. And that's exactly what they were afraid about. They were not just afraid about the government, but they were afraid about a mob rule. They were afraid about an ignorant majority, or even an informed majority, but taking away the rights of the individual. They wanted to secure the rights of the individual, and so they wrote those out in the Constitution, and they wrote the Constitution to be a framework which contained in and bound in the government. So we've gotten up too far away from that. I think that the Second Amendment needs to be updated, and we need to bear strict adherence to every word that's in the Constitution, and if it's not consistent with today's societal norms, then we need to amend it so we can continue to do that and function in society. So here's one more thing that I'll lead in with. When it gets down to it, the Constitution sets forth rights that cannot be infringed upon, right, at all. Not with little laws and little restrictions or a little bit of censorship here or there. Not at all. They cannot be infringed upon at all. If you want to change those rights, amend the Constitution. Get 3/4 of the states on board. Get 2/3 of Congress, both the House and the Senate, on board and amend the Constitution. If you don't do that, then the rights stick. So what do those rights predominantly do? They allow for people be free from the interference of, number one, government, and number two, the masses. 51% of the majority voting in laws that would take away certain rights. And the fundamental rights are the right to property, the right to freedom to act as you choose, and the right to life. So I can't go out there and use my Second Amendment right to bear arms and kill somebody without repercussions. I don't have the right to kill somebody unless it's in self-defense or defending my state or my country. So I should be punished for that. And so laws that prohibit murder are absolutely fine, and they are not an infringement upon that right. But with regard to property and the freedom to use that property as I see fit and to live without the interference of somebody else getting in my way as to what business I run and how I conduct my affairs, those are fundamental rights. There are three pillars of those of the fundamental existence here in America. If I don't have the right to possess property, then I can't conduct business. I don't own my thoughts. I don't own my intellectual property. I don't own the products that I manufacture or even the ideas that I generate. I don't own those because those are all property. And if I don't own those, then I can't generate an income from that. I can't support my family.
Now, did that have anything to do with, I mean, back then, in order to vote, you had to be a property owner, which isn't a bad idea. I mean, if you're going to make a decision on, you know, the tax base, maybe you should have some skin in the game. But did that have anything to do with that being a part of it? Life, liberty, you know, I mean, you have the pursuit or you have the option for property.
Right.
And if you purchase property now, you're a part of this voting voice.
And of course, this goes back to Declaration of Independence, where it states that, you know, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness.
Yeah.
That is what we're all looking for, and that's what we're all entitled to, and these are inalienable rights, meaning God-given. Man can't take those rights away. And so I don't know if they were specifically referring to that's what you need to have in order to vote, but what I do know is you need to have those in order to have a free people, to truly be free. If the government owns the property, then I can't be free, because then I can't innovate and create and own the services and the products that are generated, because somebody else owns that property. And as soon as the idea escapes my head, somebody else owns that idea. So the ownership of property is absolutely essential. And the freedom to think and to speak and to develop those ideas and to innovate, that has to be protected. And the freedom to live, and I think that goes along with my freedom to live cannot be imposed upon by your freedom to bear arms, right?
Right, right.
But it's life first.
Yeah.
And then it's bear arms to secure life, not to take life.
But, I mean, that's where, I guess, it's on me to make sure I don't do anything that violates your you know, freedom. I don't hurt you. I don't harm you anyway.
And we've gotten so far away from this, you know, especially with this woke ideology and all of these pronouns, that we're so upset about people choosing different pronouns. And I think that the real argument is, I don't care what pronoun you use, but don't impose it on me to speak the way that you want me to speak, right? You have the right to live however you want, unimpeded by me. But I also have the right to speak my mind, and if I do actually cause you harm, like in the Alex Jones case, sue me for libel, right? If I'm wrong and I'm spewing out lies that actually cause you actual damages that can be proved, then sue me for libel. But other than that, let me speak however I want. I'll let you speak however you want, identify however you want. So I think we need to, rather than continue to argue for tolerance of everybody's ideas and concept of what is reality, we need to argue for let everybody alone. So stay out of my business, and I'll stay out of yours.
Why not the same principle on the Second Amendment? You know, you're allowed to have any type of firearm or weapon that the government has, mm-hmm. as long as you are reasonable and you can afford it and everything like that. But if you prove that you can't handle that responsibility, then obviously you don't have those rights.
Well, because I think that weapons are so dangerous today that by the time we find out that you're proved to be irresponsible with it, it's too late. You've caused too much destruction. I mean, you can't have like a surface-to-air missile, right, and take down a passenger plane. That's too dangerous. That's my argument.
I hear you.
So I think we should amend that, the Bill of Rights, and amend the Second Amendment. But the three pillars, here's the thing. If you want to make creating laws easy and to determine whether or not they fit within the standards and the concepts that were the foundation of the Constitution, look at these three pillars. Does it impede on life? Does it impede on liberty, personal liberty? Does it impede on the ownership of property? So, for example, look at any law out there. I'll bring up a good, a common one. Seatbelts.
Okay, I love it.
Okay? Seatbelts. Does that impede on my liberty?
Yeah.
It does, because it's the government telling me what I have to do. Now, is it going to... And if I don't do this, is that going to infringe on somebody else's life, liberty, or property? If I don't wear my seatbelt, does that take away any of those three pillars from somebody else?
I mean, they make that argument that when you don't wear your seatbelt, you're not in control of the vehicle once you have an accident, and that, you know, there's issues.
Okay. I think that's a pretty weak argument. The seatbelt is to save the person's life who's wearing the seatbelt, not to save the person's life of the car that they hit.
Right.
Right? My seatbelt isn't going to lessen the damage of the accident or the car in the accident on the other side.
No, but now we're just dealing with broken bones versus a fatality. So now, you know, mm-hmm. the EMTs at the scene can get you on your way versus cleaning up a body.
Well, I don't have the right to medical assistance. I'm saying my right is to make my decisions and live with my decisions. to succeed or to fail, to help myself retain health or to decline. And that's where, so yes, we're bringing up the seatbelt argument. I would weigh in that is an infringement upon liberty.
I 100% would agree.
I'm not actually taking away anybody else's liberty or life or property by failing to wear my seatbelt. I think it's a good idea to wear a seatbelt, but it's my choice. Same thing with helmets for motorcycles. Now, for children, I think that the government could make a good case that, listen, we are protecting this child's life by requiring you as a parent to make sure that they're buckled up, okay? And I think that they would have that good argument because as a parent, we're putting them in the car, we're putting them at risk when we're driving them, so we need to put a seatbelt on them to protect their life so they can have liberty further on down the road. And so I think that's a good argument. I think the same thing goes with abortion, right? Abortion, we don't want to impose on somebody's right to do whatever they want with their body, whether they want to chop off their leg, their hand, pierce their nose, their lips, or destroy the fetus that is growing inside them. However, there is a life that we need to protect, and that is one of those fundamentals. So does the government have the not only the right but the obligation to protect the life of the citizen? And so the question becomes, what is life? And that's obviously a deeper issue for another day. But that is what I'm talking about. If you can't justify the law on those three pillars, then the law should not exist at all, because it infringes on the fundamental basis that we are here and have inalienable rights of life, liberty, and property. We have to take a break. This is 560 AM KBLU.
More thought-provoking conversation coming up next on Life, Death, and the Law, right here after this.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
I owe the IRS $37,000. Civic Tax Relief basically represented me against the IRS, and by the time everything was completed, I didn't owe the IRS anything.
Their tax resolution specialists can stop the IRS from taking money out of your paycheck.
With Civic Tax Relief, they were able to save me upwards of $80,000 that I would have had to pay.
For your free tax relief information, call now. 800-841-0908. 800-841-0908.
Mom's early Alzheimer's diagnosis was heart disease.
And when I left the oven on, we decided together that it was time to see a doctor and make a plan.
Early detection gave us more time to seek out information and support as a family. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. For more information, visit ALZ.org/time-to-talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Why did the Freon in my AC leak? Well, no metal today is like yesterday's. The copper is different and the price is higher. The new Rheem heat pumps are built like yesterday's, and now Rheem has a 10-year parts warranty on their units in the event they fail. If you want to talk heat pumps, stop by our shop, Air Central Heating and Cooling, your local Rheem dealer.
Give Air Central a call or just log on to acuba.com.
Listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hansen, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back. This is 560 AM KBLU, Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner, and I'm in studio with Adam Hansen and Cody Deason. I've been talking about what the Constitution is and how we've twisted it beyond recognition, and we need to get back to the fundamental interpretation of the Constitution, and that may even mean bringing it up to date, and specifically the Second Amendment. So the Second Amendment, I believe, says that we have the right to bear arms, and it doesn't restrict arms, or it doesn't define or couch that term in whatsoever. So we have the right to bear any arms without license, without any restriction. Do I think that's right? No. I think in today's society we need to amend that, and we need to bring in some types of restrictions, because I think that some arms out there are far too dangerous for individual private citizens to own. Adam, you've done research on the gun laws and the restrictions that have come up through the years. What is your take on that?
So I take issue with the idea of, in my opinion, it's all or nothing. And the proposition that you can limit some guns or some firearms or some type of destructive weapon without being on the slippery slope of taking it all away, which is where we're at now. Now we have the ATF coming into your home in the middle of the night without a warrant. They use a no-knock warrant. They bust down your house door, and you come in, guns a-blazing, and you're in bed, and they can do whatever they want because they've convinced the judge that you're a threat to humanity. That to me is contrary to what our founders wanted, and a lot of those ATF nighttime raids are in search of 3D printed weapons or firearms or some sort of suppressor, or that person is alleged to have something that they are not supposed to have theoretically under some sort of federal act. And so the real big acts that have amended our right to have whatever you want is when it comes to a firearm is the National Firearms Act of 1934. That was the largest one because that's what really restricted the ability of most law-abiding citizens at the time from having anything that they wanted, like a sawed-off shotgun or fully automatic weapons. And that was in response to, and if you look at the history here of our limitations on our right to bear arms as it was intended by our founders, it really comes in response to an emotional response. It's an emotional response to historical things that were happening at the time. And in the 30s, there was mob rule in cities like Chicago and New York, where the gangs and the mobs were outpowering the actual law enforcement. So law enforcement was being gunned down by Tommy guns and fully automatic weapons and sawed-off shotguns, concealable things like that. And so the response of the federal government was, well, yes, we have a right to bear arms, but not any arms that you want. We as the government need to be able to suppress our own people. Therefore, we're going to put out there a tax. If you don't pay a tax and register a firearm that's in this type of class, then you're subject to imprisonment and fines and things like that. That particular tax is actually still in place today. It was $200. So, Cody, if you're well aware of this, if you go to Spreggs and you say, hey, I want to buy a suppressor for my AR-15, then you have to go through a paperwork process. We call it a tax stamp. You have to get a tax stamp. You have to register that particular suppressor has its own identification number that's stamped on it, and that has to be registered with the federal government through the ATF. You have to go through the background check process, and you have to pay $200 to get that tax stamp.
And wait about 9 months.
That number, that value, has not changed. Back in the day, it would be equivalent to about $4,000 to $5,000, so it really was a restrictive thing back in the 30s when that $200 number was put up. The federal government has never raised the number for the tax stamp, so it's still the same number, or the same amount, $200, to get a tax stamp for a silencer or a suppressor or some sort of firearm that fits within the category that are outlined in the NFA of 1934. So the NFA Act really, it limited our ability to have anything we wanted, and that was compounded more and more over time. The bigger issues that happened later on during the 60s were the assassinations of JFK, Robert F. Kennedy, you've got Martin Luther King. This was all impetus and fuel to the fire to say, whoa, 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 we've got to get firearms further regulated. We can't just have people going out and seeing an advertisement in the magazine and saying, oh, I want to buy that, so I put my money in the mail, drop it in the mailbox, and all of a sudden I get a gun to me in the mailbox within a week or two. So mail-in orders really the big issue when it came to JFK's assassination. The shooter in JFK, in the JFK case, he saw an advertisement in a magazine and he sent away for the gun, got the gun, used it and shot the president. So even in those hearings, when it came to, nothing changed until 1968. But that 1963 is when JFK was assassinated. And so obviously this is forefront and an emotional response. We need to get something done. That is a horrible event. We don't want that ever to happen again. And that fueled the fire of further legislation to restrict the ability of interstate commerce between me being able to say, hey, I know this guy in California. I want to buy a gun. Can you just drop it in the mail to me? I'll give you the money through a wire transfer through my bank or through a check. That was restricted at the time, and it all started because of the 1963 JFK assassination. But then you had Martin Luther King shot in April in 1968, and you also had Robert Kennedy shot later in June of 1968. And 1968 is the biggest curb on interstate commerce, using the interstate commerce clause in the Constitution, which is constitutional. So if you go to the Constitution, you've got these juxtaposed powers. You've got the power of Congress that has the ability to levy taxes and the ability to regulate interstate commerce. That's expressed in our Constitution. However, you've also got the Second Amendment that says we have a right to bear arms. So you've got this interstate commerce clause that's fighting with the right to bear arms clause, and the Gun Control Act of 1968 brought in further regulation under the interstate commerce clause that Congress used to say, whoa, you can't just mail in and get a gun. You have to be able to go through a federal firearms licensed person, and we're going to make up the rules as to what that is. We're going to design this agency called the ATF, and the ATF is going to be able to levy or promulgate rules and regulations, and if you don't abide by those, then they can come into your house and take your firearms, or they can put you in jail, or they can fine you. So we designed the ATF and the BATFE, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Enforcement. And these agencies came out of the 1968 Gun Control Act and other such historical emotional events, I would argue. And so getting back, the reason I bring that up, Sean, is because I would hate for my child to be gunned down in a school shooting. I try to put myself in those Sandy Hook-type situations or the Uvalde cases. Those are incredible tragedies in our history, and I don't think it's over. I think those will continue to happen. And the reason I say that is because, in my opinion, I believe that a person that wants to do harm will do harm regardless of whether there's a law that says that I can have a shotgun that's sawed off or a fully automatic weapon or not. You're well aware, everybody's well aware, that a criminal is a criminal, and they're going to get whatever they want to get, however they're going to get it, whether that's drugs or fully automatic weapons or weapons that are under the Gun Control Act. I think the common misconception is that, oh, we're going to legislate this into existence, and therefore the problem will go away by magic. Magically, if we put this in law, oh, well, if you cannot have or possess a sawed-off shotgun or fully automatic weapon or a grenade or a rocket launcher or a drone that has the ability to kill people, you can't possess those. Why? Because we put it in this federal act. Oh, okay, but I still can. I can still get that. I can go to the dark market, and I can pick up those items if I want to. Is it harder? Yeah, it's harder, but if I really want to, I can, and I can do a lot of damage. So just putting on a piece of paper and limiting the rights of all citizens, contrary to the Second Amendment, I think is not right. I think it's a restriction on our freedom, and I think law-abiding citizens have the right to do that. Law-abiding citizens can use a grenade launcher if they want to, or a missile launcher if they want to, or a drone that can kill people. Why? Because they're responsible people and they're going to be able to take care of that. I don't think we need the government to come in and say, you can't have this, that, or the other. I think bad people are going to get bad things, or use things for bad, regardless of whether it's in legislation or not. That's just spitballing off the top of my head. Cool. And that's my response to your, I think we need to change the Second Amendment. I agree with you. If we as a community believe that the Second Amendment is too broad and we do need to be more limited, then I absolutely agree with what you're talking about, Sean, in the sense of the only rightful way to do that is to amend the Constitution. There are processes to make those changes, but we've got to go through the process to do those changes if we agree to it. But if we don't, I don't think the right way to do it is to use alternative ways like the tax power of Congress or the Interstate Commerce Clause power of Congress to limit our freedom that was given to us in the Second Amendment or the First Amendment or any amendment. I think our God-given rights are God-given rights, and they need to be amended through the proper process or channels if we're going to do that. I don't think we should do that. I disagree with you on that, Sean, but I think I do agree with you on the fact that if we are going to do it, then it has to go through the proper amendment channels, but not through finding these kind of Band-Aid methods through Congress and pointing to different clauses that they actually have expressly in the Constitution, but they're against. Or I would argue that any constitutional power that the Congress has for levying taxes or regulating interstate commerce, if it oversteps on the Second Amendment or the First Amendment, then it's unconstitutional. They're going too broad or outside that power. So they do have restrictions within those powers. They can't overstep on other bounds. And I think that's the conversation of the day. I think that's the point that you brought in the very beginning of this conversation, was that we have inalienable rights that are given to us by our Creator. And really, the government doesn't give us rights. They don't grant us rights. Our Constitution is a protection against the government from infringing on our God-given rights. And we fail to see that most of our daily lives.
Yeah, we feel like the government is giving us, and we should be grateful for everything that we are allowed to do. No.
Or we need to ask permission. It's really not that way.
We have the authority to own property, to exercise freedom, and to preserve our life as we see fit. The government should stay out of it unless it comes to the common defense of the people or the infringement upon the rights of others. That's all the time that we have for today. This is 560 AM KBLU, Life, Death, and the Law.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
TikTok is not trending in South Dakota. Back in 1 minute with your politics question of the day.
If you have diabetes and you're on Medicare, you may qualify for a free continuous glucose monitor system. Managing your diabetes is crucial to your health. The new CGM systems can automatically manage your diabetes better for you. And by using a CGM system, you can eliminate forever one thing most people with diabetes hate the most: finger sticks. Now it's possible to manage your diabetes better, end the painful finger sticks, and get a new CGM monitoring system at little or no cost to you. We even provide in-home delivery and do all the insurance paperwork for you. Now is the best time to manage your diabetes better and get your continuous glucose monitor. Call now for details. Call 800-438-1391. 800-438-1391. That's 800-438-1391.
Dakota Governor Kristi Noem has issued an executive order banning the use of TikTok for any South Dakota state agency or government employee. Those restrictions have also been extended to all of the state's independent contractors and their associated personnel. In a press release, Governor Noem said the Chinese Communist Party uses information that it gathers on TikTok to manipulate the American people. Question: do you think the national security benefits resulting from Noem's decision to eliminate access to TikTok do or do not outweigh the cost of the ban's impact on South Dakotans' right to free speech?
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, El Dorado Broadcasters LLC, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
From the one-hour air conditioning and heating studio, this is News Talk 560 KBLU.